Hey everyone, welcome into Maisie Days. I'm Amanda.
Hey everyone, welcome into Maisie Days. I'm Randy.
I love it when you mock me.
Today is a great day.
Why?
Because for a lot of reasons. We lost to Marshall last night in a huge game. Major implications on RPI rankings, all that stuff. Marshall has a brand new stadium. It was a beautiful crowd. Great atmosphere. Great for the state of West Virginia. We didn't play well. And I think we didn't play well because of the atmosphere and being on the road. They were excited. So we had some guys that I think the moment affected them. So today is a great day because we have an opportunity to teach people how to perform in that atmosphere. Those atmospheres don't happen all the time. But if you perform differently when the heat is on than you do when there's no heat on, then that's an opportunity for you to learn something and grow from it. So today's practice is all going to be about how to perform under pressure. If that wouldn't have happened, if we wouldn't have lost that game, we would have lost this opportunity to teach these kids something. That is how I spin a negative into a positive.
So you guys did perform very well in Kansas. A nice sweep. I guess if you're going to lose a game, better to lose a non-conference game in the scheme of things.
Yeah, that's just fake positivity.
But yeah. Kansas, wow. That was an amazing series. On Sunday, everybody was talking about the back-to-back-to-back-to-back home runs.
Yeah, for sure. That's pretty rare. Four homers in a row. Poor Grant Hussey came up there as the fifth guy, one of our best home run hitters. What do you think he was trying to do?
Bunt.
I wish. No, he was going for the fifth homer in a row. And usually when that happens, the result is what you get. He hit a weak ground ball to the first baseman trying to hit a homer. But yeah, that was a cool moment. We played great. Went down there and got old J.J. Weatherholt back. He led off the entire series with a base hit. Our entire dugout breathed a sigh of relief for the whole weekend. So a lot of positives there. But I did find out since our last podcast, J.J.'s good at everything. I found out something that JJ is not good at.
No way.
Kyle West and I were talking behind the batting cage, one of our players, the other day, and he said, "Coach, I've been listening to your podcast." I was like, "No way." He's like, "I really love that story about the polar bear." I'm like, "It wasn't a polar bear." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "The bear in the wintertime thing." I was like, "Oh, that story. How to catch a bear in the wintertime." And JJ happened to be standing right there. He said, "What are you guys talking about?" I said, "I tell a story on my podcast about how to catch a bear in the wintertime." He said, tell me. So I told him about cutting a hole in the ice and you take a can of peas. And when the bear comes up to take a pee, you kick him in the ice hole. And JJ said, "I don't get it." I
was JJ. Like,
thank you, JJ. I thought you knew and could do everything.
He is human.
You don't get one of my jokes. You are human.
Well, a lot of people don't get your jokes.
Another reason I'm positive today is because you made me a brand new jug of iced tea this morning. I love your iced tea.
Thanks.
Amanda makes the best iced tea ever. I just went to pull it out of the fridge. There's about a gallon of it in a glass pitcher with a glass handle. And I went to pull it out of the fridge. And when I pulled on the handle broke and came off as soon as I pulled on it. And the rest of the pitcher was still sitting in the refrigerator. My immediate reaction was, geez, that handle just broke. But when I thought about it, if the handle would have been a little stronger and it would have broken after I lifted it out of the fridge on the way to my cup, it would have smashed on the floor and a gallon of iced tea would have gone all over our floor. It would have gotten sticky. It would have attracted ants. The dogs would have been licking it. So the fact that that handle broke is a great sign.
I love the positivity today.
I'm super positive. And, by the way, I'm in such a good mood because if you drive down the highway right now and you see the purple dogwood flowers blooming, that is a sign that turkey season is coming. So the last 2 days, I have gone behind the house at daylight and tried to listen to some turkeys, see if I could identify where the turkeys are roosting at. It's not hunting season yet. I was just scouting. I took my video camera and just sat there in the middle of a field all by myself listening for turkeys. And here is what happened. So for all of my buddies out there that are listening, this one, oh, what a beautiful sound.
You're so weird.
That's You say I'm weird, but how many of my people out there are listening to this right now thinking, that is amazing? Oh, God.
I do love listening to turkeys, hearing elk. I appreciate that.
I'm actually videoing this. This turkey walked within 15 yards of me and put on a show. Look, you're looking at the video. He's strutting right now. What a beautiful sight and sound if you love nature. But the sad part is, I'm going to probably shoot that turkey. The sad part is, they are vulnerable to being shot because they're mating. Isn't that sad?
Poor. That's how I feel about the deer. They're just trying to
get a little action, right? Best time to kill deer in the fall is during the rut when they're mating. I've got a question for the listeners. If you could only mate 2 weeks out of the year like an animal, wouldn't you risk your life every time? I know, I would.
Well, it's about all you get anyway, let's be honest.
Think about that. 2 weeks out of the year, you have a chance to mate. What would you do for that chance? Would you run through traffic? I'd risk my life every time.
Good to know.
If somebody shot me, I would die happy.
Oh, my God. Oh. Okay, can we go back to Kansas for a second? Because there was something really neat that Coach Fitzgerald did Saturday. He has an autistic son, and he chose that game for a particular reason to do their autism awareness game.
Yeah, Coach Fitzgerald, the new coach at Kansas, great friend of mine, has had an amazing career and is just an amazing dude. Like you said, he's got a son with autism named Max, and they approached him at the beginning of the year and told him that they wanted to pick a game to do autism awareness. And he said, I want Maze to be a part of that because he knows our story of the Whammer and all that. And that was a real honor for me to be a part of that day. So on Saturday, it was Autism Awareness Day, and he actually brought two autistic kids to home plate when we have our umpire meeting to exchange lineups and go over the ground rules. I took two baseballs with me to home plate, West Virginia balls with the flying WV on them, and I autographed them and gave them to the autistic kids. And I wrote a little message on there and said, thank you guys for allowing me to be a part of your very special day. I tried to get those kids to be Mountaineer fans for the game, but that didn't work. They got a good laugh out of it, but I was excited and very thankful that Coach Fitz thought enough of me to do that.
I think that's a great testament to your character and his character as well. Things are just bigger than baseball sometimes, and I know that you get that, and obviously he gets that as well.
Yeah, and even last night for the Marshall game, Coach Beals, the head coach at Marshall, another great friend of mine, which kind of tells you that I value relationships in my life more than how many times one team touches home plate. But they gave me an unbelievable retirement gift. It is a piece of wood from a company in West Virginia that I've got to look into.
It's called the Bearwood Company.
The Bearwood Company. Hint, hint, if you're listening. It was a beautiful, kind of like a plaque engraved in wood. It said, basically, happy retirement. Thank you for what you've done from the Thundering Herd. And that will be hung in my office, and I will cherish that for the rest of my life. As much as the Mountaineer people are going to hate for me to say this, thank you to Coach Beals and the Thundering Herd for doing that. That means a lot to me.
Last week, you talked about your 14 rules to live by. One of those rules has really shaped your life. It's now story time with Coach Maisie.
Rule number 14, don't sweat the small stuff, even if it's not small, is the rule. And in the caption underneath, I say the mistakes that you make early in your life dictate the person that you become later in life. And that's true for everybody. How many times out there, listeners, have you made a mistake that was a biggie and you said to yourself, yeah, I'll never do that again? And usually, if a mistake is big enough, you don't do it again. And that shapes your life moving forward. So I made a biggie. God, I made a biggie. When I was in my early 30s, coaching at the University of Tennessee, everybody knew how I liked to hunt and fish and do all that. But I was the recruiting coordinator, the pitching coach, the equipment guy. I did field maintenance. I was young and aggressive, and all I thought about was working, so I didn't get to hunt much. Spent 4 years there and hardly got to hunt at all. I did get to turkey hunt a time or two. A sidebar, got another story there. This particular story, I had met a guy right around Christmas and told him how much he liked to hunt. And he said, why don't you go with me? He said, I'm going hunting to an unbelievable place next week. He said, there are some huge bucks. And I was like, heck yeah. It was first week of January. School wasn't starting for another week. That's, if there is a slow time in our profession, it's kind of then. I had just gotten a brand new rifle and a brand new bow for Christmas. And he asked me to go hunting the next week. And I was so excited. He said, I'll pick you up 4:30 in the morning, whatever day it was. I said, tell me about the place. He said, monster bucks. Bring your bow. Bring your rifle, too. If you see a monster buck out of bow range, you're not going to want to let him walk because there's some monsters there. So I was super excited. He picks me up that morning, 4:30. We go hunting, walking before daylight up the hill. We cross a fence. It was pitch dark. I had just had a little headlight on. Didn't think too much of it. Spent the day hunting. I didn't kill a deer that day. It was a great hunt. Spent the whole day in the woods. But when we walk out after dark, we get to the bottom of the hill and he said, you guys wait here. There's another kid with us. He said, I'm going to go get the car. We were carrying tree stands and weapons. He said, you guys wait here. I'll just go get the car and I'll come pick you up. We're standing there, me and the kid. And when a guy goes to get his car, when he turns his car on, there were 11 vehicles surrounding his car with lights and sirens and all kind of thing. And I looked at it and I'm like, what in the world is going on? Well, apparently, unbeknownst to me, the place that the guy took me was governmental property, nuclear weapons facility. And I was like, oh my goodness. We got in pretty good trouble for trespassing on government property. Fortunately, after it all shook out, the guy did the right thing. He actually, because it became somewhat of a news story, the guy actually wrote a letter to the editor apologizing for getting Coach Maisie involved in that. It was all his responsibility. He took me to a place that he shouldn't have took me to. I was scared to death that my coaching career was over. So the lesson to be gleaned in all this is, and to this day, I still love to hunt and fish, but if somebody asks me to go somewhere with them, and my buddies know this, I will never go somewhere that I'm not supposed to be and that I don't have permission to go on. I do not violate game laws. I teach my kids not to violate game laws. And you know, as a kid, you grow up out in the country, and I think every kid that grows up out in the country, sometimes if you shoot a deer and you realize, well, if I just don't tag this deer, I can keep hunting, or you go fishing and you catch your limit and you run home and you put them in the freezer and you go back and want to catch some more. Every kid, I think, goes through that phase that they're going to test the limits. Fortunately for me, that mistake scared me to the point where I will not do that anymore. And I teach my kids to respect game laws and don't ever go places where you're not supposed to be. And my kids, Swammer and Sierra, are very conscious that we're going to obey all the laws. That mistake has molded me into who I am today. When you make a mistake like that, albeit a big one, that was a huge shitstorm. Looking back on it, it was probably the best thing that happened to me. Now I know moving forward, I won't make the same mistake.
Good for you. Tough lesson to learn, but as long as you make mistakes, own them, and learn from them, that's all you can do in life, and that's what we teach our children.
Yeah, you know, that's when something bad happens to you.
Which it will.
It will. You can always spin it positively. Sometimes it takes a while. It's pretty tough. This morning, pulling the handle off the iced tea jug, we turned that into a positive. It's going to be a great day because the iced tea didn't spill onto the floor. That's a simple example. A huge example is our son almost died from a collision on the field. That was one of the most tragic events of our life, but we turned it into a positive by raising money for Team Whammer and helping other families. So no matter what happens to you negatively, it's tough to go through, but you can find a way to spin it positively if you try hard enough.
I think as we continue in this podcast, we'll go through the rest of your 14 rules, which now there are just 13.
Yeah.
So I think that'd be like a great, because they're really good. They're really good.
I already gave you number 14.
You mentioned another turkey story.
A good friend of mine, Mark Jackson from Knoxville, Tennessee. I love Mark Jackson. You've met Mark. He used to come to our games at the University of Tennessee, and he would bring a turkey call.
To the game.
To the game.
Not a cowbell.
He would bring a turkey call. We'd be sitting there in the middle of a game, and to loosen me up, he would hit his turkey call in the middle of the game. And I'd look up and we'd start laughing. Mark is a realtor in Knoxville, a really, really good one, and an auctioneer. We became great friends. And he set me up with a guy to go turkey hunting in Knoxville. Same thing. I just met the guy. It was his farm. We're sitting in a blind before daylight. I shake the guy's hand. We're whispering, "Hi, I'm Randy Mazey. What's your name?" So we're trying not to scare turkeys. He tells me as we're whispering, he said, "We have a white turkey, an albino turkey on this farm." He said, "It's beautiful, but it's a hen and you're not allowed to shoot hens." He said, "But it's beautiful to look at." And we were just talking and it gets daylight and we hear birds gobbling and I look up, here comes the white one. It was a gobbler. He thought it was a hen, but it was a gobbler. It was the most beautiful animal I think I'd ever seen. It wasn't the white turkey you see on the commercials where there's a million turkeys all
like
white.
Like the Tyson Thanksgiving turkeys.
Those commercials. This one was white, but every tip, every feather had black tips on it. It was beautiful. And when it spread its fan out and its feathers out and strutted, it was an amazing looking turkey. I was so excited I was going to kill a white turkey. And the guy was so upset. He was like, "Oh my God, I can't believe it's a gobbler. I've been waiting my whole life to see a white gobbler. Oh my God." And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm going to ruin this guy's life if I shoot his turkey. And he kept saying it. "Look how beautiful. Look how beautiful." I was like, "Man, why don't you shoot him? This is your place." He's like, "Really? Can I?" I was like, "Sure." And there was another gobbler back behind him. I said, "Just if you're going to shoot him, let both of them come in. I'll shoot the other one." And as soon as I told him that you go ahead and shoot it, he grabbed his gun, put it up, and killed the bird. He could care less about me killing one. And I'm like, "You SOB." I was like, so to this day, Mark Jackson, if you're listening, every time I talk to Mark Jackson when he calls me, the first thing I say to him every time is, "I should have shot the white turkey." It could be in our house right now, mounted, a white turkey strutting. Because I was trying to be the nice guy, the unselfish guy, I didn't fulfill a lifelong dream.
You still got chances.
And I'm okay. With black tips?
Yeah.
I should have shot the turkey.
I'm okay with not having another dead animal in the house. Thanks, Farmer.
Sometime in my life, I would like to be selfish. Maybe when I retire, I'll be selfish. It's not in me right now. I should have shot the white turkey.
Let it go, Maisie.
I'm so mad.
How about some listener questions? We got a lot of questions this week. John would like to know, how many boxes of baseballs does a 3-game homestand go through?
Good question. Depends on a couple things. How many foul balls are hit? Because back in the day when I started out at Charleston Southern and places like that where budget was a real concern, you would always make an announcement. "Please return all foul balls to the first base dugout," because we're trying to save balls. You didn't go through many balls. And then it turned into kids would rather keep the ball. So it turned into bring a foul ball to the concession stand to get a free Coke. Then you're trying to bribe kids to bring the balls back. But here at WVU, if a foul ball goes up, people keep it. It's amazing how people fight over foul balls in the stands. It's a baseball. People jump over top of people to get a baseball that you could go to Dick's and buy for $4.99.
Not the same.
No, not the same. We go through a lot of balls that way. And actually at our stadium, if you've ever been to Ken Kendrick Family Ballpark, if somebody hits a foul ball over the first base dugout that clears the stadium, there's a grass hill back there with really tall grass. And one of my pet peeves since I've been at West Virginia is nobody retrieves those balls because the grass is tall and it takes a little effort. And it's for 12 years, it's infuriated me that we never go get those balls. I hope before I retire that there's so many balls back there that you can walk on top of them. Nobody ever even tries. Last week when we spoke at the traumatic brain injury conference, a lady came up to me whose son, I think, was autistic. And she showed me a picture. She had about 100 baseballs, all WV balls, in a picture, and she wanted me to autograph it. I said, "Where in the world did you get all these baseballs?" She said, "Well, after every game, my son, who's autistic, goes back there and picks up all the balls in the tall grass that nobody gets. So now I feel better that those balls are going to good use." But between people keeping the foul balls, us not getting some of them, if it rains, a ball gets wet every time it gets put in play, a long answer to a short question.
Very long answer.
Is probably anywhere from 36 to six doesn't. Which leads me to another pet peeve. A quick one. If the field is wet and somebody hits a ground ball and the ball is wet and they throw the ball out of the game, don't roll the ball into the dugout. You're making the ball wetter. If the ball's already wet, throw it to the dugout. We're going to try and dry it off and reuse it. Don't take a wet ball and make it wetter. That'll be another podcast. Pet peeves.
Wet balls?
Wet balls is a pet peeve.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, your mind went in the gutter.
No, my mind talking baseballs. On baseball.
Yeah.
Megan wants to know, when are we getting those Script Mountaineer sweatshirts to the people? I believe that is maybe some team-issued gear, stuff that I like to steal from you.
It's amazing how everybody loves the team-issued stuff that you can't get. Sorry, Megan, I don't think those are available to the public. I'm willing to support an outcry. If enough people want those, I'll see what we can do to make that happen. It's amazing how everybody wants our hats that we get.
That is true. I see that a lot on social.
We have a limited supply of game hats, but everybody wants the game hat. They don't want the one you can buy at the souvenir shop. Everybody wants the game hat. I think it's the fact the sweatshirts are team issued. I don't think the public can get those as we sit here today.
Chad would like to know, what do you think about the shift in college baseball? Should MLB rules be adopted?
Yes, I do not like the shift. I just don't like more people playing on one side of the field. I like looking at a picture of a baseball field, and you have four infielders standing where they're supposed to stand, three outfielders where they're supposed to stand. I know, strategy, yada, yada, yada. I just think I'm old school, and I like old school baseball. When I retire, what I would like to do is have my own league, baseball league, with my own rules. Ginther makes fun of me all the time because we talk about it all the time. I want to play Mazie Ball. Some of my rules are that in Mazie Ball, the four infielders and the three outfielders, after every out, have to rotate one position like they do in volleyball. It won't take much time because the out's recorded, the next hitter's walking to the plate, but I think every kid should learn to play every position. I've done some players a disservice in our program, Jimmy Galuski being one of them. Jimmy only ever played shortstop for the Mountaineers. And when Jimmy signed a pro contract with the White Sox, first thing they did, put him at second base. And he never played there for me. And I thought, well, Jimmy would have been a lot better off in pro ball if he would have played multiple positions. So I think kids should play multiple positions. In addition to that, I think, how fun would this be? When a kid hits the ball, there's nobody on base, he gets to choose the direction he runs.
I love that.
He can either run first base to second base to third base back to home to score a run, or he can go third base, second base, first base back to home to score a run. He can, if there's nobody on base, when he hits the ball, he can decide which way he wants to go. So if he hits a ground ball to the first baseman, he can run to third. And that makes the first baseman field it and throw it across the infield. Once there's a guy on base, everybody has to run that direction until the bases are cleared again. Then a left-handed shortstop would be a real thing. The pitcher and catcher can't rotate spots, but if all the players can, and I'm talking about kids maybe age 12 to 15, kids learning to play positions, different positions, learning how to have feel for the game, there would be no base coaches. Kids need to learn how to run the bases on their own so they can steal second base, even if they're at third base, and steal the other direction. So a left-handed catcher could be a real thing. But how much fun would that be to watch?
That would be totally fun. I bet you could set up a game here in Morgantown like that.
I know what everybody's thinking. You're trying to be the Savannah Bananas. I've been talking about this. Ask Ginther and Jagar and those guys. We always talk about Mazie Ball rules and how much fun they would be. Ginther doesn't think they'd be fun. He always laughs at me. But I think I would like to have two teams of kids ages 12 to 15 to play some Mazie Ball.
Love it. Jeff would like to know, this is along the same lines, why does the shift appear to only be on lefties? Do I not see it for righties because I'm sitting behind the WVU dugout?
No, we do it as much on righties probably than we do on lefties. I'm not sure if the seat that you sit in actually has an effect on whether we shift or not, or whether you notice it. Good question, but I don't. Maybe because when there's a guy on first and there's a lefty up and the first baseman has to hold the runner on first base, it kind of takes him out of the play a little bit. So if he's a pull hitter, you want two other infielders on that side, including the first baseman. Yeah, no reason it happens more for lefties than righties. Even if you were on the third base dugout, we would play the same type of defense.
Brett would like to know, besides a free beer, what is your favorite beer?
Well, there's only two kinds of beer I'll drink. Warm beer and cold beer.
Not true. You do not like a warm beer. You like it as cold can be.
That's kind of a joke, but when somebody asks me what kind of beer I like, when I say that, that means I'm covering all beers. I kind of like the taste of all beers. When we travel, you and I, and we go to a bar somewhere, what do we always order?
The local light beer.
The most local, lightest beer they've got. And I'm a big fan of the sampler.
Yes, you are.
I got one in, where were we just at?
Kansas. Lawrence, yeah.
They bring me 4 craft beers, a couple ounces each, and I go from lighter to hoppier or craftier or whatever.
What I like is you always tell the waitress, whatever you choose. But in Lawrence, the girl was like, nope, you choose. Yeah. Like, that's the first time I've ever seen a waitress say, nope.
That pissed me off.
It didn't piss you off. But it just made you have to choose.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of it, is like you'd like to let somebody else choose.
Because they know more than I do. I like all kinds. We do like Rick Wagner, former Mountaineer alum, a great friend of ours and great donor to the program, has his own brewery in Baltimore called Heavy Seas Brewery. And every time Rick and his beautiful wife, Jay, come to Morgantown, they drop off a case of beer on our front porch.
I call him the beer fairy.
He is the beer fairy.
I love him. The Tropicana is my favorite. You can actually get it at the Giant Eagle here.
Yeah, so shout out to Rick and Jay and plugging their sponsorship that they don't have with our podcast.
Sponsored that stadium. It's
but
okay.
I actually got his beer put on tap at Mundy's.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. So, yeah, I love a good craft beer, but it has to be cold. We purchased a refrigerator, a beer refrigerator, courtesy of Dino Colombo. We went to his house, and he had a beer fridge, and I said, what is that? He said, it keeps your beer 1 degree above freezing, which is 24 degrees. Beer doesn't freeze at 32. It freezes apparently at 23. So this fridge keeps my beer 24 degrees. I love a cold beer.
Me too. Miss Kara Sparks would like to know, have you ever been to Mississippi to play a game? Shout out to her beautiful, handsome son, Evan. We've become good friends with them. But talk about playing in Mississippi. Have you ever?
Several times. I don't know that there's a state I haven't played in. When we were at East Carolina, Southern Miss was in the league. Played some series down in Hattiesburg. Great, great baseball atmosphere. And when I was at Clemson, we were in a regional in Starkville at Mississippi State. One of the best college baseball atmospheres dating back 50 years. Tremendous people down there, tremendous atmosphere. They actually, the fans, go out behind the left field fence and tailgate and cook. And after the game, they will feed the visiting team the food that they tailgate with. Really great people down there. Sidebar to this story is when we were playing down there, I was coaching third base. I was in my 20s. There was an umpire in third base who was real arrogant and egotistical, wasn't getting along with them. So we had a play at third base. Somebody got a base hit. One of our runners was coming into third base, and I was in the coach's box telling him to slide like coaches do when a runner's coming to third base. And this umpire, who was getting ready to make the call, runs behind me, grabs me from around behind the waist, and throws me out of the way. Like, he had to do that to make the call. And I didn't know what the heck was going on. I thought a fan came out of the stands and was tackling me from behind. So I got up swinging. I was going to beat somebody's butt. And I looked, and the umpire was standing there. I was like, what are you doing? He's like, get out of my way. I was like, let me just tell you, dude. If you touch me again on this field, you're going to be picking up your teeth with 2 broken arms. And sidebar to Starkville, Mississippi. But had a great time nonetheless. Great, great baseball atmospheres down there.
Terry would like to know, why do batters try to pull a slider instead of hitting it to opposite field like an inside out swing?
Well, ideally, what you would do, your best chances of solid contact and accuracy to the ball are to hit the ball in the direction it is coming from. If there's a fastball thrown right down the middle, ideally you want to hit it right back up the middle because that's the direction the ball's coming from. If it's a slider, depending on if the pitcher is right-handed or left-handed, or the batter is right-handed or left-handed, you might want to hit it to the opposite field, or you might want to pull it. So if it's a left-handed pitcher, stay with me, people. If it's a left-handed pitcher and a left-handed hitter, the slider is coming from right at the hitter, and it breaks over top of home plate. So the left-handed hitter should pull it, because that's the direction it's coming from. But if it's a left-handed batter and a right-handed pitcher, his slider comes at you from the opposite field. To be the most accurate, a left-handed batter should hit that one to the opposite field. And the reverse is true for right-handed batters. Good question. Physics and baseball, there are a lot of commonalities. And when I first got here, I always wanted to visit with a physics professor with a list of my baseball questions. I did that. Sean McWilliams, WVU employee, we got to know him and his wife, Stephanie. I actually visited with Sean with all of my physics baseball questions, and he answered most of them, and I enjoyed that.
Jim would like to know, what's your favorite baseball movie?
Die Hard.
It's a Christmas movie. Actually, I do not. No, I freaking hate that movie. It is not a Christmas movie. That was a joke.
People heard that.
I hate
that
movie.
Amanda thinks Die Hard is
no.
I think it's a baseball movie.
Stop.
There are a lot. How do you not like Sandlot?
I know, right?
With the kids and you're killing me, Smalls. That was a great one. Bull Durham, great movie. Rated R. Sandlot was PG. Major League with the Indians. I was actually with the Indians when they were filming Major League. I had a little bit of a personal connection. I was an Indian. They were Indians. That was kind of cool. And that was funny. I'd have to say Major League. But there's been so many.
Field of Dreams is great, too.
Field of Dreams. Is that a true story? Do people really walk through corn?
Yes.
Ghosts come out there? Yeah. Yeah, there's been so many of them.
Tracy would like to know, what would be both of your walk-up songs if you were a player? I personally like Eminem's Lose Yourself. When I would train for marathons or run a marathon, that was my go-to song that just, I could be dog-ass tired and all of a sudden the adrenaline is pumping through my veins.
Why didn't you listen to the soundtrack from Forrest Gump?
Just run.
Just run.
Just
run. Run, Forrest, run!
I did do that.
I don't know. I hate walk-up songs. Never had them when I was a player. But if I had them, I think they add nothing to your ability to hit a baseball. So I would have done it just for entertainment reasons. So I probably would have listened to Sugarland, because I love Sugarland and Jennifer Nettles. Something about her voice I just love. But when I was a player, Jennifer Nettles was probably 4 years old, so that wasn't possible. But considering where I am today and only coaching for 2 or 3 more months before I retire, if they had walk-up songs for me right now, going to the mound and doing different things, I think I would select Happy Trips.
That's appropriate. One more question. Dan Tallman, brother of Dave Tallman, MHS basketball coach, very successful basketball sports family. Between Rocky and JT, who's the favorite fan? So JT does a lot of the cooking for the baseball team, for Mountaineer athletic teams. He's always at Mondays. He sits behind the dugout along with Rocky. Vision Homes.
Vision Homes. Are we sponsored by Vision Homes?
Rocky has actually talked to us about that. Now, he was a few deep at Mondays, but I'm going to take him up on his offer. I'm going to send him that contract at Mondays.
We're giving him free advertising, right? Is that what you're telling me?
Rocky actually built our neighbor's house, but we've known him for a long time. So he's a big Mondays fan, great supporter of all sports, and sits behind the dugout as well. So
how could you possibly choose between JT and Rocky? It's like choosing between Wham and Sierra. There's no way to do that.
Correct.
So my official answer is I love them both the same.
They are awesome.
They are both awesome, and I love them the same. When we turn the mic off, I'll tell you which one I actually like better. But for the podcast, I love them both the same.
That's funny.
Side note, JT, I don't know if people know this, but we talked about the favorite meals that he cooks for our players. Did we do a podcast about
JT?
Made our favorite, my favorite meal, my personal favorite. We talked about that?
Not your personal favorite. You haven't told people that he made it for you?
He made the whole team homemade meatloaf, because that was my favorite meal as a child. So he made it for us. It was amazing.
I would have loved to have had a slice. Thanks for saving me some.
JT, you listening?
I'll take any food.
A piece of meatloaf.
I'll take any food that I don't have to cook. All right, good podcast. Are you going to tease next week? What are we?
I don't know. You tell me. Was it a good podcast?
I don't know.
Let's let the listeners decide.
Yeah, if you like our podcast, subscribe and like and share.
I like when
that's what real podcasters say.
I like when people text me and say, "Hey, man, I listened to your podcast. This was my favorite part," because we're learning as we go and trying to figure out what part of it people like and what part of it people despise.
I hope they don't despise anything.
Yeah, despise is probably a strong word. But if they did despise it, they wouldn't be listening to this one, so they don't even know that I'm talking about them.
Good point. All right, that's it. Maisie days.
14 rules to live by. Spoiler alert. Next podcast.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys.